From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the latest edition of the Wildcast podcast. Justin Spears here with Michael Lev and Ryan Finley. We are sitting in studio. Before we get started, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Also, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. So, guys, we are sitting here in studio talking some Arizona football, all angles, NFL draft, also a spring football wrap up, and also looking ahead to off season and the plans before preseason training camp. What's going on, guys? How's everybody doing?
Good.
Yeah, great.
Good.
How are you, Justin?
I'm good.
How's your foot?
Better. Off the boot.
Yeah, Justin was on the injured list for a little while. I don't know if people knew that or not.
Well, they do now. What happened?
Playing basketball at the Racquet Club.
Nice. Half court basketball injury. You're getting older. You're getting older.
But I'm
just
back.
Just wait till you get into your 40s. Well, you're not even close to your 30s. Yeah, yeah, but just wait till you get into your 40s, Justin.
There's a lot of stretching. I've seen Michael Lev do a lot of stretching.
I do a lot of stretching, yes.
So, guys, where should we start?
Stretching.
Well, let's start with stretching.
Stretching.
Who didn't stretch? The Detroit Lions.
Let's start with the end of the NFL draft. That was a stretch.
Oh.
Pick number 229
in
the seventh round of the NFL draft. The Detroit Lions select defensive tackle out of Arizona, PJ Johnson. He had a workout, or not a workout, but
private
he met
visit.
A private visit with the Detroit Lions. So, I mean, if there's any team that was going to draft him, it was going to be either Detroit. He also
Giants, Falcons. Yeah.
Another one. And we also have an interview with PJ Johnson that we'll play at the end of the podcast. He joined me on ESPN Tucson a couple days after he got drafted to talk about it all. Very interesting guy. So we'll play that towards the end. And Michael Lev, I mean, you wrote a story on him leading up to the NFL draft. He's got a story like
sure
nobody
does.
Else.
Yeah, he's been through a lot in his life. Growing up in kind of a rough area of South Sacramento, moving around a lot as a kid, being around a lot of violence, gangbanging, drive-by shootings, all of that type of stuff. His parents were very strict, though, and they put their kids in sports. I mean, for the sole purpose of keeping them off the streets. I mean, he literally told me, like, this is why we played sports, so that we would not be involved in this stuff. And gangbanging was not happening under my dad's watch. So he develops into this pretty good football player. There were some stops and starts along the way, various things that happened with him. He didn't play football right away either. He started out in baseball and it was because of my favorite anecdote in the entire story, Ryan, about how the Pop Warner leagues were corrupt.
This is incredible.
In his area. He was like, quote, this is what PJ said. There was a lot of gambling. There was a lot of gambling going on apparently in Pop Warner football in South Sacramento, which
like
I thought was
paying
just
kids
like,
to shave points.
I just don't even know what that even means. But
that's worse. If you're actually paying the kids, I thought it was just like the parents, like, hey, what do you got the over under on this game? Like, I'll bet you that my kids' team wins. You know,
I don't know what that's all about. But anyway,
for what it's worth, my kids aren't good enough to succeed, much less shave points. If they were, I'd think about it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Anyway, so he played baseball. Baseball was kind of the first sport that he played until he was 11, and then he started playing with the 13 and 14 year olds because he was too big to play with his age group, and he hated it at first because, you know, he just felt like he was just getting killed in every one of these practices. But then, you know, coach kind of told him, like, hey, you know, you're actually improving and getting better, and he went to a camp and started to do well, and then he totally fell in love with football. He told me he read all these books about football, including the one I put in there, which was The Catch, which is the story of, you know, Joe Montana's famous pass to Dwight Clark. He started watching all these movies and documentaries about football. He, like, the way he played Madden changed even. Like, he's like, I started to think like a coach, and I'd like to pay attention to the strategies and the tendencies. And when you talk to him, he's super smart. Like, he knows the game really well. Like, I think if his playing career doesn't work out, I'm confident he could be a very successful defensive line coach or defensive coordinator down the line. What's interesting about Detroit as a landing spot for him is they have Snacks Harrison, one of the greatest nicknames, by the way, of all time. Damon Harrison, being called Snacks, who's kind of like a player that PJ has modeled his game after. He mentioned to me, you know, when I talked to him after the draft, that Snacks followed him back on Instagram recently, which PJ thought was like kind of a sign, you know, that this was sort of a great landing spot for me. And he's like, you know, I can kind of use, hopefully he'll mentor me, you know, and I can pick up some of the wisdom that he's had, as a, you know, long time defensive tackle in the NFL. Detroit's coach, you know, Matt Patricia, you know, comes from the new, from the Bill Belichick, tree. And, you know, they usually find a way to utilize the talents of a player, right? Like Bill Belichick's whole thing is don't tell me what they can't do, tell me what they can do. So I feel like if they like something they saw in PJ, certain skill set, they're going to figure out how to use that to their advantage. They're not just going to look at like a 325 pound guy and say like, oh, you know, he's a nose tackle. We're just going to stick him over the center. I think they're going to realize what he does well, which is actually kind of play a little bit off to the edge, use his initial quickness, his hands, to get past offensive linemen and make plays in the backfield.
Yeah. What a great story. I think, you know, and it hasn't been a great decade for Arizona when it comes to NFL draft picks and good stories. And, my goodness, he's just, that PJ Johnson went from where he came from to the National Football League as a draft pick. I think it matters. You know, people say, you know, it's that old trope like, oh, you know, it's better to pick your team rather than be a seventh round draft pick. Not if you're PJ Johnson.
No.
The pick itself is validation for everything he's been through, everything he's done. I think it's justification a little bit for leaving school when he could have returned. It's money for his two small children. It's, you know, I think he told you, Justin, on the air, he's thinking of buying a house.
Yeah.
You know, for somebody like that, who's come that far to now be talking about, you know, money for his kids, buying a house, playing in the NFL. It's what sports are all about, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's what we love about sports, those kinds of stories. And super excited for him. And, you know, I'm not a Detroit Lions fan, but I will watch them now. Especially if PJ Johnson's getting some run.
Yeah. I didn't play this up that much in the story I did leading up to the draft because I had written about it during the season, but he also had some major health scares.
Totally.
When he was at Sac State, he had a burst appendix that kind of came out of nowhere and lost a bunch of weight and his organs were failing. I mean, like, it was like a seriously near death type of experience. And the way he describes it, like his girlfriend comes into the hospital room and tells him that she's pregnant. And it kind of gave him like, you know, this motivation and will to live kind of thing. And then later he plays the next year. And then the following season, he has a tumor in his leg and can't play. So he missed two of his first three seasons. Which is why he had to apply for a sixth year if he wanted to come back here. And everyone thought he was going to because he went through that whole process. But then he went home over winter break and was around his kids and just felt like, you know what? I can't go back to school. I have to be around these guys. Mm-hmm. I have to provide for these guys. I don't know if this quote made it into the story. I don't think it did, but he told me, that in relation to that whole story about, you know, wanting to live, to take care of his mm-hmm. kids, he's like, I hate deadbeat dads. I didn't want to be a deadbeat dad, even if I was dead. So
good quote.
I probably should have put that in the story, yeah. Right? In retrospect,
quotes like that belong places.
Yeah,
high
I know.
Up in
I
just, stories, Michael. Yeah.
It just sort of slipped through the cracks, mm-hmm. but that to me just kind of summarizes what this guy's all about. Very motivated for a lot of different reasons. So good for him. As great of a story as it is, I don't know how much we should be celebrating the fact that Arizona had one player picked and it was in the seventh round. As
correct.
Far as the program goes,
right?
You know, that's still pretty disappointing. And it's something that I'm sure Kevin Sumlin would like to change as mm-hmm. far as narratives go.
Absolutely. It's funny, Justin, you and I talked yesterday a little bit about how Mike Stoops was actually able to, despite the fact he didn't win a ton of games, he was able to really produce good NFL players. And it was yep. because they played kind of your prototypical NFL system. One thing that Rich Rod's system was not was prototypical, right? Little receivers, little running backs.
Running quarterbacks,
a defense that did not necessarily lend itself to NFL success, right? Scooby Wright did great. Don't get me wrong. Scooby Wright was fantastic. But a defense that, you know, a 3-3-5 odd stack, you don't see a lot of that in the NFL now. I think what we're starting to see with Kevin Sumlin, even though the defense is kind of similar, Michael, you can speak to that a little bit. I think we're starting to see Kevin Sumlin's offense is more prototypical. He uses air quotes. Prototypical than Rich Rod's was. I think his defense is leaning toward being more prototypical than it was under Rich Rod. I just think as a byproduct of that and their renewed dedication to recruiting not only Texas but Polynesian players, I think that that should produce more NFL guys in the past, but maybe not for another couple of years.
Yeah, but one thing that Stoops was really good at was bringing in NFL talent all across the board, not just on the defensive side of the ball. You look at Rob Gronkowski, even Nick Foles, Chris Henry, who was a running back that was drafted in the second round to the Titans. Look at special teams. Nick Folk was another guy that was drafted. I'm looking at the list of draftees, and the only one that you can consider a Rich Rod player, but he was a Stoops recruit, was Kadeem Carey.
Right.
And that was the only offensive guy that was taken in the NFL draft during the Rich Rod era. So I just think that
Say that again, because that's incredible to me. Say it again.
So from the time that Rich Rodriguez was the head coach at the University of Arizona,
from 2012 to 2018,
there has been only 17. One offensive player, and that is a Mike Stoops recruit in Kadeem Carey.
That's really incredible.
That's incredible.
Think of how good their numbers have been too.
Think of how many games they won.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, didn't they lose like one non-conference game ever under Rich
Rod? Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, think of how many games they won without your prototypical guys. By the way, now this is a separate conversation and probably a separate podcast. I don't think it's a college coach's job to produce NFL players. I don't think Rich Rod considered that part of his job. I think Kevin Sumlin does. And you know, maybe that's what we'll see here.
But isn't that what you sell to kids, though?
Yes,
when you're going
that's
to their
exactly
house.
What I was going to say. It's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Like, if you can produce more NFL players, you can get more talent into the building. And that's the whole game. Isn't that why Kevin Sumlin's here, to bring in big-time recruits who weren't coming here before?
Well, fortunately for Kevin Sumlin, he can go to recruits and say, well, my previous stop, look at all the guys that just went in this past year's draft.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, you're right.
So, yeah, there were seven Texas A&M players drafted. Six of them were Sumlin guys, whom he recruited and coached.
Right. I see, and I would compare some of the Rich Rod offensive stuff to maybe like a 40 minutes of hell approach in basketball, right? Where you're never going to get a 7-foot center to play in that system, right? You can win a ton of games, but you're not going to produce pros. I don't know. We can argue. Like I said, that's a separate podcast. I happen to agree with Rich Rodriguez. If they're going 8-4 every year, I don't care who they're producing. Or if they're producing guys. I don't. The problem with Rich Rod is he did go 8-4 every year until he stopped.
Yeah.
And then they went into a free fall and they fired him.
So the other player who we thought could be drafted was Sean Poindexter. Mm-hmm. And he ended up being a priority free agent, which is a little bit different distinction from being there's all sorts of different, like some guys just go for a tryout, you know, the week after the draft. You know, some guys are just undrafted free agents. Some guys are quote unquote priority free agents. I was told that Sean is a priority free agent for the 49ers. Some people questioned whether that was the best landing spot for him because the 49ers spent, I want to say, second and third round picks on wide receivers. Mm-hmm. One of whom, Jalen Hurd from Baylor, who's I think started his career at Tennessee. Maybe Justin can look this up while we're talking here, but is also sort of a tall X wide receiver project type of guy, similar profile in a way to what Sean Poindexter is, but he felt really comfortable with the 49ers coaches. You know, Miles Austin came out here for the pro day and pretty much ran the whole workout that Sean did. Wes Welker is their wide receivers coach now, and he's an undrafted free agent as well. So is Miles Austin. So Sean Poindexter feels like they can relate to him. You know, and they will understand the position that he's in. One thing I like about Sean, two things. One is I feel like he's just scratching the surface, right?
Right.
He hasn't played football that long. Mm-hmm. And really last year was the first year he was featured in any shape or form. So I feel like there's an upside there. And the second thing is he can play in special teams. He's not one of these guys who's just a wide receiver. You know, sort of maybe the most like infamous play that he was involved in as an Arizona Wildcat was in the 2017 Territorial Cup, where he was called for that illegal block on the punt return.
That never happened.
Which wasn't an illegal block. It was just such an incredibly good play by him. I think he actually rushed the punter, ran all the way downfield, you know, blindsided a dude. And, you know, the Pac-12 refs missed the call, which is certainly not
typical.
Yeah. Never seen that before, right? So I like his attitude, his work ethic. So again, another guy who's motivated in a major way. He wants to do something for the community with his money. That's what he wants to do. He doesn't want to buy, you know, a bunch of fancy cars or boats or houses or whatever. And so, yeah, Sean's headed to the 49ers. Mm-hmm. And Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, who you talk about, is just a great kid. Like, everybody loves Demetrius whenever they meet him. He's the nicest guy you'll ever come across. Total mama's boy.
Comes from a great family.
Yeah.
We talked to his grandpa.
Yeah, we did.
At spring football.
Really?
We're just sitting outside the building. Yeah. And we're talking about Bryce Coleman, right? Who's Demetrius's cousin. And then there's this elderly gentleman who was sitting nearby. He's like, oh yeah, I know who Bryce Coleman is. I'm his grandpa. And so we learned about Bryce. We learned a little bit about Demetrius. I don't know if Demetrius is going to stick. But I do know that he's the kind of guy you like to have in your locker room or have in your camp. And it is a major position of need, actually, the 49ers. People were shocked that the 49ers did not address safety in this draft. It probably would have made more sense for them to have spent one of those two high picks on a safety instead of bringing in two wide receivers. So we'll see how things go.
Right. Here's what I like about Demetrius Flanagan Foles, too. And I'm not sure if you – I don't think you were here for this. You know, he played at Tucson High, transferred to Mountain View, was suspended by the AIA his senior year because basically they had ruled that he went specifically to Mountain View to play football. Was added to Arizona, was originally going to gray shirt. He wasn't going to show up at Arizona until the following year. And at that point, he would not have played football for two consecutive years, right? And then I believe some guys decommitted. There was some shuffling and Demetrius Flanagan Fowles joined. What's interesting is, I mean, I remember in real time there, nobody expected him to, he was like the 25th guy on their 25-man recruiting class. I don't think anybody expected him to come in and play as well as he did right away. I mean, he was, I think, one of their better defensive players his first 2 years here. He played a lot. I think he struggled a little bit as a junior.
True.
But, you know, he was a guy who I think he's exceeded expectations in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's guys like that who tend to succeed when you go to a place like the NFL as an undrafted free agent, somebody who has beaten the odds before. And both Poindexter and Demetrius fit the bill there.
Yeah. You know, growing up in the Tucson area, you normally get a sense of D1 guys that are going to go out and either play at U of A or play in somewhere in the Pac-12 or just play anywhere. I had no idea who Demetrius Flanagan Fowles was until he was an Arizona Wildcat. I had no idea who Levi Wallace was until he walked on in Alabama.
Right.
You know, I just think it's another cool story because here is a Tucson guy deciding to stay home, play for the Arizona Wildcats, and I had no expectations for him. Like you said, Ryan, you look at that recruiting class. This was the kind of recruit that Demetrius Flanagan Fowles was. Normally, they always have like mugshots of recruits. He was the guy that just had a blank face. There was nothing on there. So the expectations were very low for Demetrius Flanagan Fowles when he came in, but not really a super eyebrow raising career at Arizona. It was pretty steady. I mean, but he was a starter ever since he was a freshman, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, came in and played right away.
Good leader.
Mm-hmm.
Rebounded during his senior year. He lost his starting job for a couple weeks there and then finished really well. The analytics community likes him quite a bit. He ranked really high in some of the PFF college statistical analyses. By the way, Levi Wallace was a walk-on at Bama, went undrafted despite being one of the best cornerbacks in the SEC, and then he played a bunch last year.
Yeah, he did for the Bills.
For the Buffalo Bills. Yeah. So it can happen. It can happen if you go that route.
Mm. Let's talk about spring football and just wrapping up and maybe some questions that some of you guys may have for the off season. So spring football wrapped up a couple of weeks ago, a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it seems like it was forever ago, but it was pretty recently. Spring game happened. Khalil Tate, we saw a glimpse of him. And by glimpse, it was just a home run pass to Devon Cooper. But what did you take away from the entire spring game, Michael Lev?
Well, let's start with Khalil and the quarterback situation. I think the fact that he didn't play very much spoke volumes that he's going to be their guy. I think we can pretty much put to rest all of the speculation that he's going to leave in the summer or whatever. Maybe these are famous last words. Then I'm going to be proved wrong about this. And then he's going to hit the ejection button at some point. But I just don't get that feeling. You know, when you watch the other quarterbacks, I mean, I thought Grant Gunnell did pretty well. And I feel like he's on the fast track to being a college-ready quarterback. But I still think that it's in the best interest of him and in the best interest of the program for him to not be in that mix until 2020. Like, the best thing for the team, to me, is to have Khalil Tate be that guy again in 2019. He'd be the best version of himself, you know, to kind of use a Jay Johnson term that he often will throw out there.
It's a good term.
And I think it's the best chance for the quarterbacks to develop on without being rushed. And I think it's the best chance for Arizona to win. Mm-hmm. Like, if you can get, let's say you get 75% of the 2017 Khalil Tate experience, that gives you a chance to win a lot of games, mm-hmm. in a Pac-12 South that is pretty vulnerable right now.
And with a non-conference schedule that's not scaring anybody.
No. I mean, could they lose at Hawaii to start the season?
Sure.
They could. Could they lose at home at Texas Tech? They could, but could they also go 3-0?
Right.
I think they definitely can. Mm-hmm. And I think it would behoove them to do that too.
Who's the first Pac-12 game?
A UCLA. Mm-hmm.
It's a home game.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I mean, realistically, we could be sitting here talking about Arizona going 4-0.
Yeah, we said that last year too. It didn't happen.
It definitely did not happen.
Completely blasted at Houston.
And they lost their opener. Yeah, they weren't 1-0.
Yeah, they were 0-2. But I think that one of the sort of senses I got from the spring is that everyone just kind of feels more comfortable with each other, the coaches to the players to the coaches, the language, the system. The expectations, I think all of that will help. You know, it was kind of, I don't want to say that they were flying by the seat of their pants last year, but it was kind of a chaotic off season. I mean, the coaching change happened relatively late in the game. I mean, someone's spending a lot of his spring just putting together a staff, you know, putting a recruiting plan in place. You can see by comparison how quickly they acted this year. Mm-hmm. To when Andy Vaughn left to bring in a replacement, you know, to run the recruiting operation. You know, there was a greater sense of urgency. Like, we've already got good stuff in place. Let's keep this going. We don't want to lose the momentum, that we have. And they were tweeting out, last week all these sort of like faux, like airline tickets
passes,
showing boarding passes, mm-hmm. showing like where the coaches were on the road. So, they're definitely headed, I think, in a distinct, specific direction as a program.
I ask you a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did spring convince you one way or another, as to whether or not the relationship between the head coach, the offensive coordinator, and the quarterback has improved?
Ooh, that's a really good question. It sort of like depends on who you talk to, right? Like, Noah Mazzone definitely acknowledged that there was some friction, right? Wouldn't you agree with that, Justin?
Yes.
Like,
100%.
He used the term growing pains, and he's like, I think we're in a better place now as far as what our expectations are for each other.
Well, and even Khalil Tate, after the spring game, he kind of owned up to saying, well, I need to be more connected. Even though I'm going to be in Los Angeles mm-hmm. for a good part of the summer,
right.
I still need to be connected back to headquarters with Noah Mazzone.
Yeah, when we talked to Khalil during spring, he pretty much was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Noel and I had a great relationship. All along. I don't know where this came from, but I agree with you. I liked what he had to say about, like, I still need to get on the phone with Noel. I need to stay. I think the term he used was like football connected.
Yeah.
Okay. I think. And Taylor Mazzone came out toward the end of spring and said, like, this is a new Khalil. Like, whatever happened in the past is in the past. Mm-hmm. He's more engaged now. And I think that was one of the issues, you know, that was mm-hmm. never really brought up in a public way, but it was sort of like when you talk to Kevin Sumlin early in spring, like, what are you looking for? More leadership, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, who's he talking about when he was saying that, right? He's talking about the quarterback, let's face it. So I think those are the things they want to see out of Khalil moving forward here in the offseason, is be that leader, be the guy who is organizing the player run practices, who's spending extra time looking at film, doing all those things that you have to do as a quarterback to succeed when people have started to kind of figure you out a little bit. It's kind of like, to use a baseball analogy, Ryan, I know you love like
crossing my sports analogies.
Yeah. I know you love these analogies. It's like when you come up, as a, like a flame throwing pitcher in baseball, right? And maybe the first couple times you go out there, you're just blowing everybody away. Well, eventually, like, major league players are going to catch up to a pitcher who only throws a hard fastball.
The
you have
third
to come
time
up with,
through the order. Yes. Right. Yes.
You have to come up with you have to change speeds, right? Mm-hmm. You have to come up with a secondary pitch or a third pitch if you're a starting pitcher. I think that's where we are now with Khalil. Like, he can't just rely on his athleticism. Mm-hmm. He has to show the ability to make plays within the system, read defenses better. And I think he definitely showed some signs toward the end of the year that he can do that. And hopefully he'll build on that, build on a, what seemed like a pretty positive spring, and just have a better year in 2019 that he had in 18. Mm-hmm.
Biggest concern for you guys involving the Arizona Wildcats, and in a specific position, if you had to say, you know, if I had a lot of if I have a lot of questions, it's about this group. Which one is that?
Yeah, it's no question to me that it's interior defensive line. Basically talking about two positions. We're talking about defensive tackle and nose tackle. They're kind of shifting from a 3-3-5 to more of a 4-2-5 type of look on defense. I mean, the edge guys both had their hands down, I think, almost 100% of the time in the spring game. And I feel pretty good about those positions with Jalen Harris, Kylan Wilborn, J.B. Brown, Justin Belknap, more guys coming. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Interior defensive line. Fintan Connolly is going to be asked to do more than he's ever been asked to do in the past.
He was on like the 2008 team. Is Fintan Connolly 40 years old? How long has Fintan Connolly been around?
He is a fifth-year senior.
He has been relevant since – I mean, we've been talking about him since he got here. Doesn't it feel that way? Go ahead.
So Miles Tapasoa, who, you know, looked good early in spring, then just kind of disappeared. Then he resurfaced late in spring, and they said he had some sort of an injury issue. Some of us speculated that maybe this was an academic thing, you know, that they were kind of like, okay, you need to, maybe he was falling behind. You need to focus on your academics. I'm not reporting this. This is just speculation. Anyway, he came back at the end. He actually played in the spring game. Good sign. 300 plus pound junior college transfer. So there's two guys. They moved Jalen Cochran inside to the three technique. He had been a defensive end. He's certainly big enough to do it, but he's been very injury prone in his career. They're using Nahe Salunga, who's going to be a redshirt freshman this year inside. He's undersized. He's about 260 some pounds. Certainly doesn't have the physique of a nose tackle, right? So you really have to hope that Trayvon Mason, the other junior college transfer, and Kane Bradford, the incoming freshman, can contribute, if you're not going to add a grad transfer to the mix. And they haven't done that yet. Every time we'd ask Kevin Sumlin about it, he'd sort of talk about how hard it is to get these guys because everyone's going after the same handful of attractive defensive line prospects. We opened the show talking about PJ Johnson, right? Rarity at Arizona to find like a 300 plus pound defensive tackle who can make plays. They are the hardest. We've talked about this before. It's the hardest thing to find in all of football. Most of them seem like they go to the SEC or the Big Ten. You don't find a ton of these guys on the West Coast in the Pac-12. Certainly not at Arizona. Mm-hmm. So finding those types of guys, it's really difficult. And to me, that is the biggest potential weakness on this defense. I like the edge rushers. I like the linebackers. I think the cornerback position is vastly improved. All that stuff is good. But if you can't stop the run, mm-hmm. teams are just constantly ripping off 7-8 yard runs against you. It's kind of like Arizona's baseball team right now, right? They have this one major flaw. They can't pitch. And if you can't pitch, you can't win. If you can't stop the run, it's really hard to play good defense and win football games.
Michael Lev covering all of his beats on this podcast.
Well, it's funny. Even in a league where nobody really runs, right? Even in a league where nobody runs, but you got to stop the run.
But if you look at the stats, they do.
You and your stats.
They do. You know that a Chip Kelly team is going to run.
Yes.
You know Oregon, even though they have Justin Herbert, that they're going to run.
Right.
They play USC, USC looks at Arizona's, you know, undersized defensive front and we're like, we haven't been running the football. We're going to run the football today. Mm-hmm. Utah is a physical running team. Mm-hmm. Arizona, their best player probably right now is Eno Benjamin. Arizona State, their best player is probably Eno Benjamin, right? Because they lost their quarterback. They lost their big wide receiver. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to build their offense around a running back.
Right. And I'm not sure that I would consider Arizona a running school, but guess who led the league in rushing last year?
That's right. Arizona did.
Arizona.
Yep. Yeah. So I think, you know, we can talk all we want about how much the spread offense has infiltrated college football and pass, pass, pass. Mm-hmm. And I know what the reputation of the Pac-12 is. I also know what I've seen over the last couple of years. And teams have exploited that weakness against Arizona frequently. And they're going to do so again if they feel like they can. I mean, mm-hmm. you mentioned the BYU game mm-hmm. last year. BYU just came in here and just was like, we are the more physical team.
Right.
We are going to pound away with our running game.
That fly offense.
They did that in 2018. They did it in 2016. Bad matchup for Arizona, right? That's what we all said. Stanford's back on the schedule this year. Even though they didn't run the ball well last season, like I think in part, you know, Bryce Love was banged up a lot and they just kind of went away from that. I can certainly envision them coming in here or wherever that game is. I think it might be at Stanford, saying we're going to pound away at this Arizona defense. So to me, that is by far the most critical area for this team.
Speaking of defense, let's talk to PJ Johnson, who joined me on ESPN Tucson recently, talking about NFL draft life outside of football, including a potential real estate career. For Michael, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening. Former Arizona Wildcat defensive tackle and now current member of the Detroit Lions, PJ Johnson joins us. What's up, PJ?
What's up?
So, PJ, take us through that moment. You're drafted in the seventh round to the Detroit Lions. Just take us back through that moment when you got the phone call.
So I was chilling outside, and I was on the phone with the Ravens because the Ravens kept calling to try to set up an undrafted free agent deal if I didn't get drafted. And I was just talking to them, and I thought the Ravens were going to draft me before, but they ended up drafting a D-tackle. So I was like, okay, I don't know if I want to go to you guys draft a D-tackle, and I know the Lions really like me. And they haven't drafted one. So if they didn't draft one, I'll find my finance for the Lions if they don't draft me. But I knew the Lions had two picks left. And so I'm on the phone with them and I'm telling them, like, I'm not coming to go to the Lions. Like, I'm trying to get them to trade for a pick in the seventh so they could draft me. But I really want to go to the Lions more. And I'm like, man, I hope the Lions draft me. They got two picks left. So I'm on the phone with the Ravens, and then I get the call from the Lions. I say, excuse me, I'm getting a call from the Lions. And I hung up, and I answered the phone to the Lions, and they just told me they were drafting me.
Wow, that's awesome. So you said you always wanted to go to Detroit. What about the Lions makes them a great fit for you?
Just during my visits, that was the visit I liked the most, like learning from the coaches and meeting and sitting down with everybody. And then I really look up to Smack Harrison, so he's there, and I can learn from him, so I was like, okay, I want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Former Arizona Wildcat defensive tackle and now current member of the Detroit Lions, P.J. Johnson, joins us right here on ESPN Tucson. And, P.J., did you have any established relationship with Detroit? Did you go out and work out in Detroit?
No, I had a visit.
So how did the visit go?
The visit went great.
Talk about the interview process. Is it as weird as people say they are? Do they ask weird questions when they interview you?
In my experience, I didn't have any weird questions. It was more questions that made sense. From what I understand from the guys I know during this process and met, it was more during the combine when they asked the crazy stuff. Later down the line, they asked more realistic questions because it's time to double down and figure out who you're going to actually get. So I guess during the combine process, people get those crazy questions, but I didn't go to the combine, so I didn't get no crazy questions.
You know, knowing your history with your appendix and then the tumor that they found in your leg at your previous stops, was there ever a moment in time where you thought maybe the NFL wasn't a fit for me?
I never really thought I was going to the NFL until I made it a goal when I left Sacramento State and went to City College. When I got to City College, I thought I was going to the NFL. Besides that, I was just a kid trying to take care of his kids and graduate and get a career so my kids could have a good life. Before him, I loved football, but I'd never seen it. I've seen the NFL as a reachable goal because the school I was at and the team wasn't having success and had a whole bunch of stuff going on. I was just more focused on graduating and being a good dad more than the NFL. But once I left, I was like, okay, I'm going to the NFL. That's my goal.
Did graduating from the U of A have any effects or any impact on your decision to go to the NFL?
My biggest thing was graduating when it came to school, period. Like, you go to school to graduate. Some people don't think that way, but I've always thought that way. And so my biggest thing, if I wouldn't have graduated, I wouldn't have left. I had to graduate.
Former Arizona Wildcat and current defensive tackle for the Detroit Lions, P.J. Johnson, joins us right here on ESPN Tucson. And, P.J., how many guys from your area in Sacramento go to the NFL?
Actually, we got a lot from Sacramento right now. For my particular neighborhood, I believe it's just two of us. But for the most part, it's a lot because Jonah Williams from Alabama got drafted. He's from Sacramento. Cameron Smith from USC, he got drafted. He's from Sacramento. So we got some guys from Sacramento, but the South Sacramento part is me, and Terrence Mitchell on the Cleveland Browns, from what I understand. If I'm missing anybody, I'm sorry, but that's what's on my mind right now.
For somebody that's unfamiliar with your side of Sacramento, how would you best describe it to somebody?
Grimy. That's probably the best word. Grimy.
Do you have any like personal experiences that you can share, or just something that you have seen?
Most of my personal experiences are so graphic I wouldn't even want to share them on the air.
Okay. P.J. Johnson, Detroit Lions defensive tackle, joins us right here on ESPN Tucson. But now that you are an NFL player, what's the feeling been like over the last couple of days? Has it really settled in?
I'm not one of those people that get, like, too sucked into the moment. I know this is just an opportunity to have a job that I want, that can take care of my kids. So I'm working harder. And I'm just ready to get a chance to prove myself and make sure I make the team, because just because you get drafted doesn't mean you're on the team for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I still got to work and prove myself. So that's all I'm focused about. It's like, it's okay to, in the moment, right away, I'm happy, but it's like, okay, I got to get to work and prove, make these coaches feel like, okay, yeah, I made the right decision picking this kid. And so that's all I'm focused on now, is making these coaches never regret their decision to pick me up. Mm-hmm.
What has maybe the Detroit Lions or any other NFL scout, what have they told you that, yeah, you're good, but this is what you need to work on? What was the kind of the trending theme?
I was always on the same page with them. I self-critique myself worse, harder than anybody else could. So I knew my weight and my stamina were my biggest problems. Once I get into better shape and I lose a lot of the body shot on me, it would do wonders for my play. And everybody said the same thing.
Now you were at 335 when you were at Arizona. What's the ideal weight for PJ Johnson?
Right now I'm at 325 and I feel good. I'll know more like once we get pads on and stuff, but I feel really good at this weight because more than just the weight, it's the body fat percentage. I lost a lot of body fat, and so just now that I have as much dead weight that doesn't carry it, so I feel a lot better. I can move better. I last longer.
Have you had a chance to talk to Matt Patricia at all, the head coach?
Yeah, during the process, and I talked to pretty much the whole staff during when they drafted me. Like, they passed the phone all around, and I just got to have a quick talk with everybody.
How is Matt Patricia, by the way?
He's a great guy.
Yeah, how would you describe him?
He was a great guy. He was straight for me. He just told me some things. But more than anything, when we talked, he was just talking to me about being a father, and he was like, man, more than anything, make sure you're a father. Like, you have to take care of those. The same thing I've always thought, he just put it, gave it to me in more of an older, more wiser tone and told me it, and just told me some stories about life and people he's met. And there's more things. Our talk was more about life than football. And I can see me becoming a better man being around him.
You know, with your family and you being a father, what's the best part about you going to the NFL?
Just being able to provide for my children and give them what they want in life and be able to set them up to be in a better place than I was when I was growing up. They don't really have to work. As long as I'm working hard and I'm on the NFL and doing what I'm supposed to do, they don't have to worry about the lights being off and not being able to do those type of things. But just being able to take care of my kids, that's the best part.
So what do you buy your kids, or what's the first thing that you purchase with an NFL contract, PJ?
I'm so cheap. Might get I'm for sure gonna go to toys. Well, Toys R Us is closed, but go get some toys. I love buying my kids toys. So probably the first thing I just get is buy a bunch of toys for my kids, especially my son, because he's older. Just buy a bunch of toys, because I play with the toys with my kids too. So it's like I'm buying myself something too.
What are toys nowadays? Because I mean, I remember, you know, I'm sure you can attest to this. The only toys we ever needed was a football, a basketball, and maybe a hoop.
Yeah. My son is he likes everything. So like, he loves Superman and Spider-Man and Batman. So I buy a bunch of those type of toys. He likes Power Rangers, so I get some Power Rangers toys. He loves sports already, so I buy him the basketballs, little small basketball. I buy him all that stuff. He likes Nerf guns. Buy him Nerf guns. We shoot Nerf guns at each other. Like, there's a bunch of different toys. They got so much now. Like, kids can get so much.
Former U of A defensive tackle, now Detroit Lion, PJ Johnson joins us right here on ESPN Tucson. And PJ, so what's the next steps for you?
Next steps is leave when we're supposed to report and get to work.
Well, when do you guys report?
I'm not completely sure I'm supposed to be able to say that publicly yet, so
okay.
I won't even say it.
Okay. Is there anything about Detroit that you're interested in outside of football?
I heard it's a good place to start real estate, so I want to learn about the real estate there. And I just like the access. It's like there's access to different states and the lakes over there. There's a lot of stuff I can see. Like when I visited, I just like the views of things. I didn't really go anywhere, so just traveling around the state of Michigan and the city of Detroit, I thought I could see a lot of beautiful things.
How'd you get into real estate?
I've always wanted to get into real estate. It's something I used to hear people talk about when I was younger, and I always wanted to have my own home just so I could pass on for generations. And it just be like, okay, that's Grandpa CJ's house that he passed on to him and passed down to my dad. Now it's passed down to you. Like I like that story and movie, so I always wanted to have a house that I could pass down for generations. So if something was happening to my family, they'd for sure have somewhere to live.
That's awesome, man. That is so cool. One last thought, PJ. So now that you got a little bit of extra money in your pocket, does this mean a new gold grill for PJ Johnson?
For sure. Eventually.
PJ Johnson, defensive tackle for the Detroit Lions, former Arizona Wildcat. PJ, thank you so much for joining us. And once again, congratulations on officially becoming an NFL player.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care, PJ.
You too.